It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. Scott Gilbert, president of Habitat for Humanity in our area, is here with us. Mike Scanlon is joining us this time, the Chief Acquisitions and Development Officer. So forget about the title. What do you do, Mike?
Find land, build homes.
Okay. I like that a lot. That's a lot easier.
I think
it's
in the reverse order.
It rolls. Build homes, find land. Fair enough. Habitat for Humanity actually just celebrated their second anniversary in the new building. And then this spring, Habitat for Humanity in this area will celebrate its 20th anniversary. So Habitat, the history of Habitat in this area, Scott, goes back from before you came here and kind of took things to the next level, I guess you might say. I want to say the first Habitat homes that were built in this area, there wasn't even a physical space that Habitat occupied, because this is well before the store opened, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The first home was started in 2000 and was completed, you know, subsequently, and I believe in 01. Yeah, and it was very much a volunteer-driven, no staff, no location, no office. And I think the next home was like 2 or 3 years later. And I got involved about 15 years ago. And we had a home in Emma, the first one, a home in Carter Glen, Glenwood, the second home. And we were working on a duplex in Carbondale. So we used to do a home every couple of years, whether we needed to or not. And it's evolved dramatically to where we completed 8 in the past year and are on track to do 10 each in the next, you know, next 2 years. So it's completely transformed from all volunteer organization that was very loosely affiliated to, you know, a real nonprofit in the valley with, you know, 49-ish employees, staff members. And a lot of that's driven by the size of the restore and the fact we're building at such a pace. We've got about 15 people on the job site full-time, plus the volunteers, and then we've got about a 5-person administrative staff, and the rest are keeping that restore rocking.
Again, it's the second anniversary of that new restore that occurred in January this year. You know, a lot of us will remember back in the day, at one time you actually had 3 restore locations, didn't you? Was it 4? That's right, because you had Basalt. You had the Cattle Creek, then you had the other one there at the CMC turn, and then you rented that space for a while out in West Glenwood.
Yeah, we were a moving target. In fact, Overall, I think we had 10 – the current locations are 10th different location, and them all at the same time. It's interesting, when we started thinking what we were doing, we realized what we're doing is practicing the same philosophy we practice for our homeowners. Figuring if we could give our homeowners a permanent space, they'd have a financial advantage of paying a mortgage, not rent, and a real sense of permanence. We followed that same philosophy for the store. We wanted to have a permanent place we could have a store so our customers, our shoppers, we call them our guests, would know where to go. They wouldn't have to go to 4 different locations. We wanted a permanent place that would be our home that our staff could rely on. We had some pretty loosey-goosey rental deals where to keep our rent low, they could easily throw us out with very little notice. We'd have to find a place. But now we can say to our staff, if you do a good job, you're going to have a job here sort of forever because we're not going to get bumped out. And so it's really transformed what we could be for our shoppers or our guests and transformed for our staff. It's like a real home, a real sense of permanence.
I imagine from an administrative standpoint, like cash flow, it probably makes a big difference too. I know it's more square feet probably than you had total when you had all the different locations, but having one base of operation for everything, I imagine, has to pretty much improve everything.
Yeah, it's interesting. It took us a while to figure it out because we'd get furniture at one end and have to move it 70 yards to get it to where it goes. Like, we never dealt with 70 yards before. The irony is we have almost exactly the same space now in that one location with our 40,000-square-foot store and our 10,000-square-foot warehouse around the back of the brewery gym as we had before, but now it's one location. The impact has been phenomenal. Our shoppers love it. We get great comments. We're often called the best restore in the country. People come from all over because we are a tourist destination, and they come in, they can't believe it's a restore, and they can't believe how much nicer it is than their home store. We've had people come with trailers from Missouri, and where they, I think the Kansas City Chiefs are from there, right? From Missouri, and that's where Mike's from.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
So, sorry, and they'll take a trailer back full of furniture. So it's really phenomenal. Not only we have a great local following, we have this sort of moniker of being the best store in the country. Our sales have increased dramatically, far beyond our imagination, for two reasons. One, we're able to get great inventory into a nice location. Our auditor wasn't convinced that we went to one location and took out a mortgage. We had a really good economic development loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He thought we were taking a risk and didn't think we could increase our sales 10%. But now, after 2 years in the new store, our sales are up 47%. Staggering. After 12 years in business now, we've sold $19 million worth of items out of the store. And probably the single biggest thing was having a consolidated, really nice location. Our guys finally got used to the rhythm, and now we know how to sort of work more efficiently. But ironically, when your neighbor here from the studio, Jake Jabs, closed down the Glenwood Springs American Furniture Warehouse, our sales went up like $50,000 per month every month since he closed the store. So we've been able to fill a void in that part of the price market. We have brand new mattresses, a big piece of what they did. We have furniture that's quite frankly higher quality, and since a lot of it's been donated, we can sell it for a lot less than even his new, not as durable and well-made items as he used to sell. So it's really given us a great boost because it got people to come to our store who might have gone to the American Furniture Warehouse before. They decided to come to us. So we did send him a really nice fruit basket for Christmas this past year to say thanks for creating the opportunity for our homeowner, the people in the valleys to shop.
And some people might say that maybe you are one of the reasons why that change was made as well. I don't know about that, but I'm just – timing is interesting.
So I think we contributed to them realizing there wasn't enough money to go around to support their store and everybody else, and they opted out. And they've got a really nice, great store in Grand Junction for those people that want to – from the Colorado Valley, that's an easier shot. From the Roaring Fork Valley, it's a long way to go, and they do a good job. So they've really helped us to realize our potential.
By the way, the website is habitatroaringfork.org if you want to get in touch with Habitat for Humanity. I want to say you actually have information on some of the items you sell in the ReStore on the website and on Facebook as well.
Yeah, and we also we send out an email blast every other week, actually two. One focused on the treasures that we have, the really nice stuff that comes in that you wouldn't expect to find, that call them high-end items. Okay. And the other one focused on the bargains, which is stuff we have at amazing prices. They're all great values, but some are at a higher price point because they are so valuable and they're so unique, and some are more at a sort of functional, transactional price to keep the stuff moving. But, yeah, and then we actually have an app people can sign up for in Google Play or on the Apple Store. And that's one way to stay in touch with the inventory. But the inventory changes every day, and so we have some stuff online, some unusual things. The best way to see what's happening is really to come in. And the inventory is made up not only of amazingly donated items, but also we now sell brand-new mattresses, brand-new rugs, brand-new scratch-and-dent appliances, small kitchen appliances, flooring. So our store is partially grown dramatically because of the highly selective items we also were able to sell that are brand new at great prices to go with, our amazing donated items. We've got on the floor today, we've got a really nice BMW motorcycle for $7,500. Not easy to sell motorcycles in the winter, but we've got one. We've got a beautiful Steinway piano from 1954. It's mind-blowing the things we get.
By the way, the name of that app is Roaring Fork Valley ReStore. So if you want to search for that in the App Store, be it Google Play or the Apple, the iTunes Store, and it's Roaring Fork Valley ReStore. And then you can see, again, some select items. It's not all-inclusive. You don't actually sell anything. It's not an e-marketplace or anything like that. But you can learn about some of the treasures, as Scott calls them, that are available there, as well as some of the everyday items. Yeah. How many square feet is the new ReStore?
The store is 40,000 square feet, which is the size of a football field, and well, not including the end zones, which I used to joke where the Broncos were playing last year. They didn't need the end zone that often, but now I'm a lot more optimistic that they've got a quarterback that can make it happen.
I'm sure Mike would appreciate that.
and then we have a 10,000 square foot warehouse where we store a bunch of items. In fact, some really interesting things happen that you can't necessarily expect. We got a big donation from the Limelight Hotel in Snowmass Village last spring, and we ended up selling a portion of that to a group in Denver that's putting together an apartment house for people that are getting out of prison, so formerly incarcerated people is what I'd like to say. So we're selling them furniture for 40 single-bedroom apartments and furniture for 10 two-bedroom apartments. So donation from Snowmass Village comes to us. We store it in our warehouse, sell a lot to locals that come through, and sold a bulk amount to an organization, a nonprofit in Denver. The tentacles of what we all do is mind-blowing sometimes. You know, we buy our cabinets for our homes and exterior walls out of a prison in southeastern Colorado. We sell those same cabinets in the store. You can order them. And so we're helping people to get some self-esteem, respect, and get their life back on track. And that's just a bonus we never expected, but it gives us a really nice feeling.
Again, if you want to sign up for that email list, just go to habitatroaringfork.org, and you can sign up for both of those emails. And, again, you can always check out the app in your whatever your particular—
I think we call it Restore Insider, I think.
Yeah.
I think is how it goes.
And, again, the name of the app is Roaring Fork Valley Restore. If you just search for that, it will come up. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. And obviously, selling those items is not just what Habitat is about. That's kind of half, if you will, or one side of Habitat for Humanity. The other side is building those houses. And we'll talk about that, including the latest big project, Basalt Vista, in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon we're talking, getting the update, I guess you might say, from Habitat for Humanity of the Roaring Fork Valley. Again, Scott Gilbert is the president. Mike Scanlon is the Chief Acquisitions and Development Officer. Remind me what you said before, Mike. You find land, you build houses.
Correct. In that order.
Usually, right?
Yes.
So the current big project right now is Basalt Vista, just above Basalt High School on, what is that? That's Basalt Mountain.
Correct. Yeah.
So
I think it's Light Hill, the back of Light Hill.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I know Basalt Mountain. Basalt Mountain's on the other side of the Roaring Fork.
Right. It looks at Basalt Mountain. How long have you been here, Gabe?
I don't remember. I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
Basalt Vista, behind the high school.
How long has this project, how long have you been working on this?
So Habitat's been working on this project for about 5 years. Okay. So there was about 2 to 3 years where you're going through the organizing the partners, getting the land use approvals. And this is truly a partnership. So Basalt Vista Housing Partnership is how it started in terms of its name. And it's sort of been a contraction down to Basalt Vista, which is how most of the community knows the project today.
When you're talking about partners, explain what you mean by that.
Well, there was a piece of property behind the high school that looked like it could hold some housing. And I, at the time, served on the Basalt Educational Foundation, and Rob Stein and Diana Serco, who were co-superintendents at the time, they said one of their biggest problems was teacher housing. And I said, well, you know, you have a parcel of land back there that might be able to be used. Scott Gilbert, John Peacock with Pitkin County were able to sit down and work out an arrangement where Scott said, hey, John, if I could find some land to build some affordable housing, do you have any money that you could contribute for infrastructure? So it started with the school district contributing land. Pitkin County saying, we have money that we could dedicate to help build the infrastructure out. And then it was sort of like, Habitat, can you build the homes? So that's where the partnership started, with those three entities. And then layered in was Basalt understood the importance, the town of Basalt. So they then reduced some of their fees and permitting costs so that the project could go forward. Then it was a Basalt council member that said, hey, could you make this a net zero community? And then that net zero discussion then brought in CORE, Holy Cross, Bryant of Colorado, Sunset Solar to create sort of that net zero opportunity that we have now. So Basalt Vista is a net zero community.
Did that actually increase the cost of the development, going the net zero route?
That was the initial fear. Okay. But with the partners coming on and what we were able to generate in donations and grants, either through CORE or Pitkin County or various donors that really bought into the net zero concept, the net cost to the homeowner is just the same as if we would have put in gas lines and electric.
Interesting.
So it's an all-electric community.
And for people that are listening that may not be familiar with the term net zero, so net means the bottom line, right? So if it's net profit, then that means what you make after you account for all the expenses and everything. So when you're talking about a net zero home, you're talking about energy and resources. So
Correct. Basically
it means you're in some way generating via solar or other ways the power that you're using to heat the house and light the house and all of that.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it really starts with building that home's environment in a way that is super insulated, that takes advantage of the sun, puts the windows in the right places, you know, orients the home in the correct, you know, sun corridor. And then putting on enough photovoltaic modules, so the solar pieces, so that it generates more electricity than it uses. So net would be just making it even. And what we've done is we've actually put on more kilowatts of solar than the home would typically consume based on, you know, the number of people that would inhabit it.
Interesting. So actually it would be a net negative house.
Right.
Right. You're in the middle of Basalt Vista, so how many houses will you build when all is said and done?
27 homes.
Okay.
When we're done in three phases. We're about ready to finish phase one in May. So phase one will be completed in May. We've already started phase two. Phase two should be done by spring of next year. And our hope would be that in 2 years, all 27 homes are built and people are in them.
There might be some misconceptions about Habitat for Humanity. It's low-income housing. It's, housing for people that don't have or don't want to get a job. Lazy people, right?
Right.
And actually, particularly in the case of Basalt Vista, just as an example, you've got hardworking people from the community that are living and will live in these homes.
Exactly. One of the phrases that we use is that we're building homes for the people that our community needs. And if you just go through that roster of phase one and two and you look at the families that are moving into the homes, so let's say in those first 18 homes, those 18 homes actually represent somewhere between 34 and 38 workers in our community. And those workers range from police officers to teachers, and teachers in multiple school districts. So 14 of the homes are dedicated to teachers, 13 to Pitkin County employees, and that's employers in Pitkin County. And that includes airport workers, hospital workers, people that work for Pitkin County, people that work in the service industry, hotels and restaurants.
And, that's quite an impact. And again, it's not just people who work for Pitkin County, the governmental agency. It's people who work in Pitkin County. Could be something like a school, could be something like Aspen Valley Hospital.
Exactly.
And it could be people working in the private sector as well.
Yes.
And those people that own those Habitat for Humanity homes, first of all, they had to help build those homes.
Correct.
They had to participate in to a degree financially to build those homes, right?
Yes, they did.
And those houses are all deed restricted, so they can't get this great net zero, net negative,
right,
Habitat for Humanity home, turn around and sell it for $750,000. They're deed restricted. I believe, is it tied to inflation, Mike? Or?
It's price capped. So okay. It's inflation up to 3%.
Okay.
And 3% being the annual cap. So especially in the resort mountain communities, deed restrictions are just a way of life in terms of creating affordability that can sustain itself over time. We have finite access to land. Our labor costs are typically higher because we have to import our labor. Our materials are typically higher. So trying to find that sweet spot for us is kind of the key or the magic to all of this. And without partners, Basalt Vista wouldn't happen.
When will you start phase three, and have you already awarded those phase three homes?
Phase three homes haven't been awarded. We just awarded the phase two homes in October, November. So those are our newest families who are starting to work through their sweat equity, one of which is coming with 10 of their family members and friends this weekend to work on phase two. So they're are the end of phase one. So they're getting the head start sort of on their sweat equity hours. And that's a big part of Basalt Vista, is that the families contribute sweat equity hours either individually or with their friends or extended family that live in the area. And then the amazing amount of volunteers. I think the idea that this is a teacher housing project really kind of hit the mark in terms of people wanting to volunteer. And it's a passion to help, I think. We might not have some of the best builders that are our volunteers, but their passion to help the community seems to be what brings them in.
Well, I want to jump in, Gabe, because you asked the question about how this compares to sort of the perception some people have about Habitat for Humanity homes and how that plays out. And this actually, as Mike mentioned, is a real partnership and quite different from just us doing it our own way. And the key differences are things like we used to build homes only for people under 60% AMI, which is the area median income, which is about under 60,000 income is the easiest way to put that. It depends on the numbers of kids and et cetera. This project is actually based for people in the workforce who are in the 60 to 80 AMI or 80 to 105, 105% being if you had two teachers both making the median salary for the school district, they could still apply because they wouldn't be priced out. And a lot of times there's this area where people aren't at low enough income levels to get support and aren't at high enough income levels to afford a home. But one of the other big differences on this project, you know, and Mike's talking about the volunteer aspects and the sweat equity aspects, to the best of our knowledge, we're the only Habitat for Humanity affiliate in the world where we're actually paying people to do their sweat equity. And the way we're paying them is we're putting money into their down payment the day they sign for the mortgage to give them a head start. We found especially the teachers had so much debt, college debt, car debt, et cetera, working a couple jobs, can't keep up. We've got one of our staff members with significant debt, for example, paying 19% interest. He makes payments every month on his credit card, and he's basically just treading water. A lot of the student loans, one of our homeowners was actually falling further behind every month because her payment wasn't enough to eat into the principal. So we've tried to analyze the situation in our valleys, trying to analyze the income levels of our, you know, potential homeowners, and we have this unique test program, really, to pay people for their volunteer work, their sweat equity, into their own home, into their down payment. We also got some grant money from the Garfield County Housing Authority to put another $10,000 on top of the $25,000 we pay them for sweat equity. The Housing Authority grants another $10,000 for the teachers to help them get ahead. So we really tried to figure out what we can do to make it different. So we like to say, you know, I talked earlier about this great restore we have. We call it the best in the country. We have people tell us we're building the nicest, best Habitat homes in the country, the world, quite frankly. You know, so while each Habitat affiliate is somewhat different, we're really excited about the progressive way we've tried to go after the problem. And we're getting attention all over the place. I mean, the governor's come up, the head of the Senate's come up. We even have Warren Buffett, we understand, sending the head of Habitat for Humanity Omaha and the superintendent of schools from Omaha are coming out this spring to see what we did and how we made it happen.
Interesting.
This whole idea of net zero community for teachers
sure.
seems really a breakthrough.
And by the numbers, the Roaring Fork Valley Habitat for Humanity Restore is in the top 20 in the world, right?
Yeah, it's really crazy if you think about it for our population. We have by far the highest per capita sales of any restore in the country. because of the small population we have and the really robust store. I mean, it's, you know, it's, we're really fortunate to have the model we have, and we've just figured out a way to make it work for our community, and it's pretty exciting.
Again, if you want to learn more, you can go to habitatroaringfork.org. Again, if you want to sign up for either one of those email lists, you can do it there. If you search for Habitat Roaring Fork Valley or something along those lines, you can also find that app on your particular mobile device's store, be it the Play Store or the Apple iTunes store. Back to wrap things up in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon, we're talking about Habitat for Humanity of the Roaring Fork Valley. Scott Gilbert is the president for the last, I think you said, 15 years or so. Mike Scanlon is the chief acquisitions and development officer. So I guess you would say it's his boots on the ground for a lot of these Habitat for Humanity's homes. Finding land, building houses.
Correct.
Is how you described it. It's interesting to see the progression of Habitat. Again, 20 years this spring since the first Habitat homes were built, again, without any real formal organization locally. You know, lots of volunteers, and now here we are, 2020. There's the brand new 40,000 square foot ReStore, which is, of course, supporting a lot of building these homes and that kind of thing. I forget the number of paid staff that Scott said. You said around 50, right? Or was it more than that?
On the build side, it's about 13.
Okay, so about 13 in the build, but in the ReStore.
Sure, yeah. About 50 total.
It's just interesting, all of this growth, I guess you might say, that Habitat for Humanity has seen in this area. Again, we mentioned that working currently on phase two of Basalt Vista, considering the time between identifying a piece of land, putting together the partners like you talked about before, vetting the homeowners, right, building the houses. There's a lot of time in between there. It reminds me kind of like the Grand Avenue Bridge, right?
Yes,
and
it
is. That 2.5 month period where suddenly the old bridge is gone and the new one is there and people are driving on it. I imagine there has to be an extraordinary amount of planning with Habitat for Humanity, too, to do what you do, building these houses.
Absolutely, especially in this valley. Like I said before, we have a finite amount of land that runs the entire Roaring Fork Corridor and the Grand River Corridor. So you're looking for parcels which can support residential housing. And we've sort of come up with sort of a four-part test when we're looking at potential projects. The first is land, and whether it's free or funded, we have to have a way to access the land in a way that makes it affordable, because land around here is really expensive. And the second is infrastructure in that. You know, does it have infrastructure in place, and can we build infrastructure at a low cost or a nominal cost to the overall project?
Actually, that's one of the situations where being a net zero might actually help you, because net zero might mean you need less infrastructure all the way out to the house.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. So you're trying to marry a couple of concepts. And the one thing that I always remind people, location's important for almost every commercial business. You'll hear location, location, location. That's also true for building in the Roaring Fork Valley. If you can build closer to transit, where you can subtract transportation costs out for the homeowner, if you can get close to services like we were talking about in terms of like net zero, and if it's got the right zoning. So it's that location that really becomes important for us. Partnerships, as we take on larger projects, we can't do it by ourselves. We lose money every time we build a home. And our goal is not to lose as much money the next time as we did this time. And really, it's partners that help us do that. And finding things that, like, excite the community. What we found in Basalt Vista, that teacher component, really excited the community. Because I think what we will tell you is that when we impact a family in a typical Habitat home, it may be that family and whatever those job producers are in the family. When we talk about Basalt Vista and the teachers, we've impacted four teachers in the first two buildings, the first four homes. But those four teachers impact 108 students, which converts into 108 families. So we look at the impact that we're doing at Salt Vista, and we're saying, can we do that again? Can we magnify our impact in the community so that we truly are, you know, doing the most that we can do with the resources available to us?
And having said, again, you've got 13 staff members that help build the homes
right.
with Habitat for Humanity and all kinds of volunteer labor. Some of those volunteers are actually paid by their employer to volunteer those hours.
Correct.
I know Alpine Bank, Bank of Colorado, both actually pay staff to do volunteer days. I know there are others. I don't want to exclude anybody.
Yeah.
But there are a number of organizations that actually do that and encourage their employees.
Aspen Ski Company.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're huge, too, as
right.
well. Yeah. And so there are so many people. And Habitat is a little bit unique. Every nonprofit obviously has volunteer opportunities. Habitat has so many in so many different areas, depending on what it is that you enjoy, what your vocation is, what your knowledge is. You can help build Habitat homes. You can work kind of behind the scenes, working on all of these deals that go on with the other partners. You can help out in the ReStore. You can just donate items, as
Correct.
Scott mentioned, the Limelight Lodge and Snowmass did. And so there are so many ways that you can work with Habitat. Again, HabitatRoaringFork.org is the website. And any final thoughts, Scott?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when we talk about volunteers, we don't always think about mentioning, for example, the Department of Corrections, probably the guys that come out, and it's usually about 6 or 7 or 8 guys that come out 3 days a week in the winter. They volunteer at the ReStore a day, volunteer at the job site 2 days. They make up together almost a third of all the volunteer hours we get. We also have a really dedicated and committed board of directors. In fact, Tom Kenning's been our board chair for almost 10 years. Tom is a chief administrative officer, I think is his current title, Alpine Bank. And you're right, Alpine Bank is an amazing contributor to community financially and with time, as a lot of the banks are. You know, Bank of Colorado is involved with us. First Bank's involved with us. Wells Fargo actually gave us $45,000 last year paying us for having their volunteers come on site from their family, from their foundation. A&B's been talking to us. It's just amazing. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone. I apologize. But our board members, we've also Carolyn Metacroft, for example, who works at Vectra Bank, has been a board member for 20 years, and we gave her an award to acknowledge that. But it's staggering. And we have a number of other super committed board members. And then our two biggest donors who have given together over $2.5 million insist on being anonymous. So while we have some great donors who like the credit to encourage other people and some people and, you know, organizations and companies, you know, part of why we're still in business, if you will, or in existence, is we have a couple of really generous, thoughtful people who just want to flow below the radar or the radio waves, as they say. So it's very gratifying. You know, Mike and I are like catalysts bringing everyone together to make great things happen where it's really needed. Because as Mike said earlier, you know, we need the people in our community who need affordable housing. So it's really, it's a very fortunate way for us to spend our time.
What's your background, Mike? Are you a builder by trade or?
No, I'm a city town manager by trade.
Okay.
And so when you start with land and then build homes, I've been working on that, finding land for development and developers for 30 years.
Interesting. Obviously, you get a paycheck for working for Habitat for Humanity, but I have to feel like you probably have a greater sense of some kind of accomplishment doing this good work that you do, providing these homes for, you know, from police officers to teachers to hospital workers and on and on and on.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, for me, sort of the magic moment, and we had one yesterday with the Beals, a family that closed on their loan with Alpine Bank. It's that time, that 5 to 10 seconds when you turn the keys over to them, when you know all the work that built that home, the people that contributed their efforts, and then the people that are so grateful that you made a home available to them.
I'm sure that's a story that you've heard lots of times, Scott.
It's, you know, the moment when people start to sign the mortgage, they really don't understand all the details, but they understand that you know, they're going to have a home is great. It's actually interesting. What's really been something I didn't anticipate is, and it's happened consistently, when people know that they've been selected to be able to help build and buy a home, or they know they won the lottery in these cases to be able to build and help buy, that moment changes things for them. As much as, or even more so than the actual moment of moving in, they now know they have a plan. They now know they have a place to be here, and a lot of the uncertainty goes away. But you know, so it's just knowing it's going to happen is, it seems, maybe even better than the actual event. You know, moment.
You ever get tired of hearing stories like that?
No, I'm a sucker. I tear up every time. You know, and this may sound odd, but we're just frustrated. We can't do more faster. You know, and, you know, when we sit down, when we used to sit down and interview the families to understand their story, you know, we just felt sort of helpless, you know, and now that we've gotten to scale, we're feeling better about what we can do, you know.
Again, the website is habitatroaringfork.org. Of course, Earth Day comes up in April. That's a great excuse for you to come back and see us again then.
Sounds awesome.
You have to. You said you would on the radio now.
Thanks,
all Kate. The best, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.